Good morning, ladies and gentlemen. Thank you for standing by, and welcome to Astatio's conference call to discuss the fourth quarter and year of 2010 results. This event is also being broadcast simultaneously on the Internet via webcast, which can be accessed on the company's IR website, www.astatioparticipatos.com.br/IR, together with the respective presentation and the earnings release. We would like to inform you that during the company's presentation, all participants will be able to only listen to the call. We will then begin the question and answer session, when further instructions will be given. In case you need any assistance during the conference, please request the operator's help by pressing *0. This conference call contains forward-looking statements that are subject to known and unknown risks and uncertainties that could cause the company's actual results to differ materially from those expressed in the forward-looking statements. Such statements speak only as if the date they are made, and the company is under no obligation to update them in the light of new information on future developments. I will now turn the conference over to Mr. Eduardo Alcalay, CEO. Please, Mr. Eduardo, you may proceed.
Thank you, and good morning, everyone. Welcome to our conference call for our results for the fourth quarter and the full year of 2010. I have here with me Rogério Melzi, our new Chief Financial Officer, who took over last Monday. Melzi, who was already a member of the Executive Committee of Astatio as Chief Operating Officer, has vast experience on our business, which will add to strength our functioning of the Astatio's Financial Department and Investors Relations. Some of you already met him, in which he participated as the COO, and I am absolutely confident that he will be committed to work closely with you to improve even further our excellent relationship with the market. As you are going to be able to realize already on this call, Rogério brings with him a thorough and very deep experience with all the drivers and dynamics of our business. Being able to interact with you and discuss the performance of the company in a much comprehensive way. Our IR team remains the same under the leadership of Flavio Oliveira, who you all know and who is always with us in the event we hold for the market. Well, I'll begin this presentation with the year's highlights and then pass to Melzi, who will comment on our results in detail. After that, we'll go straight into the Q&A session. Let's begin with the slide number 2, which is available on our website. In 2010, we celebrated important achievements like the launch of the new academic model designed to conceive and deliver a great quality education on a nationwide scale and cost efficiently, strengthening our differentiation as a provider of quality education at accessible prices for the growing and still underserved segment of the working adults in Brazil. We have now over 70,000 students in this new model, and we already start to reap the benefits in greater efficiency in faculty costs and higher average tuitions, offsetting the costs incurred with the textbooks material under the new model. We consolidated our position among the leaders in the distance learning segment and ended the year of 2010 with more than 26,000 students after just 18 months of operation. We failed, though, on one important point in 2010, which you already know, and followed closely during the year. We did not reach our enrollment target for the first half of 2010, and this affected our growth and performance. The 48,000 on-campus students enrolled in the first half of the year, which is 8.9% less than 2009, and the decline in the enrollment renewal base in 2010 due to the elimination of delinquent students and those students with high discounts, all of that combined affected our on-campus student base during the year. However, thanks to our successful commercial and marketing strategy, we recovered strongly in the second half of the year and grew 20% over the same period of 2009. Even though this is not enough to compensate for the loss in the students' growth in the first half of the year. Looking forward, we're confident about the future results of our management model. Regarding growth, the rebound saw in the second half of 2010 continues in this first half of 2011. It is important to note. In 2010, as we're going to be able to discuss here, we had reached efficiency gains, maintained our financial health, and controlled our working capital. Going to the slide number three, let's discuss a little bit of the highlights. Our consolidated net revenues remained stable at 1 billion reais. Net revenue growth from distance learning and the 5% increase on on-campus average ticket, as I commented already, were able to offset our on-campus student base decline of 6%, as already noted. In this scenario of stable, flat revenues, the productivity gains in faculty cost, as well as in administrative personnel, combined with the improvements on our general and admin expenses, slightly contributed to EBITDA and EBITDA margin, which total 127 million reais and 12.5% respectively, delivering our former guidance to the market. The numbers, it is important to note, continue to show our firm control over costs and expenses at all levels. And as I said, we delivered our 70 basis points EBITDA margin increase. And that brings us very comfortable to, once resuming growth, we will be able to grow with accelerated margin expansion gains. Net income for the year grew 27% to 80 million reais in 2010, thanks to better fiscal management and the implementation of the IFRS accounting standards, which make the financial statements more representative of the actual reality. Based on our comfortable financial situation and the net income growth, we're proposing at the next annual shareholders meeting dividend payments of 38 million reais, which is 50% payout ratio. I'll now pass to Melzi, who will go into the details of our results, and I will return to conclude the presentation and then go into the Q&A. Melzi, with you now.
Well, thank you, Otari. Good morning, everyone. I wish to start by saying that I am very enthusiastic and motivated about taking over the finance area, and that, as Otari mentioned, I am committed to improve even further the excellent relation that Estácio has with the market. As a matter of fact, I intend to meet as many of you as possible as soon as I finish some of my activities in the old role as CEO at Estácio. Let us now take a look at the numbers by starting in slide number four, which shows our operating performance. We closed 2010 with more than 210,000 education students, which is 2.1% more than in 2009. Here, I must highlight the growth of the distance learning base, which has more than 26,000 students in just 18 months of operations, which made us one of the leaders in this segment. Those are very strong results, a great achievement at Estácio, coming from our strong commitment to create and provide a great service and product, which is very different in the market. Though enrollment in the second half of 2010 were 20% higher than the same period in 2009, the on-campus student base declined 6.3%. This decline was due to the lower number of students in the beginning of 2010, lower than expected enrollment in the first half, as Akala mentioned, which obviously resulted in a lower base to the second half of 2010, and also a 21% increase in the number of students graduating in 2010 as compared to 2009. Moving on to slide number five, we will look at the operating revenue, which was obviously affected by this 6.3% decline in the on-campus student base, remaining practically stable year over year. The 11.3 million growth, in distance learning revenue, and again, gain in on-campus average ticket were important drivers, offsetting the losses resulting from on-campus student base decline. The average distance learning ticket fell by 13% due to the launch of new courses, whose average tickets are usually lower than the older ones. note that the net revenue from distance learning grew 356% in 2010. Also note the big improvement in revenue with deductions on a year-over-year basis. For similar revenue in 2010, about 1.45 billion reais, as compared to 2009, we gave 12 million reais less discounts over our revenues, which is very difficult. This is a great achievement, again, because we were at the same time adopting more restrictive credit policies towards our students. Now, on slide number 6, which shows our costs, I wish to highlight that the ratio of recurring cash costs to net revenue remained practically stable in relation to 2009, mainly due to a strong gain in personal costs, despite the higher tax burden stemming from INSS social security charges and inflationary pressures over wages. This efficiency helped us to offset the 15.5 million increase in textbook costs. The 4.3 percentage point increase in the quarter was mainly due to the 6.5 million reais increase in costs related to textbooks distributed to students enrolled since 2010, and 4.4 million related to the INSS tax burden. On slide number 7, we will comment on our SG&A expenses, excluding depreciation and non-recurring expenses. In 2010, the ratio of SG&A expenses to net revenue was down by 0.7 percentage points, mainly due to a better management of general expenses at the units and at the corporate center, which more than offset the increase in marketing expenses during the year. In other words, we are saving more and more G&I resources so we can reinvest these limited resources in sales, which is very healthy to the company. The gain in the ratio of G&A expenses to net revenue was 4.6 percentage points, mainly due to the 4.8 million reais reduction in the provision for doubtful accounts, resulting from higher recovery of monthly tuitions and better control of default, plus 11 million reais in other expenses coming from productivity gains from the SSC, the Shared Services Center, operations, and also from our continuous quest for efficiency. The 2.7 percentage point increase in marketing expenses between the fourth quarter of 2009 and the fourth quarter of 2010 was due to the postponement of the enrollment campaigns to the first half of 2010, since this strategy resulted in quite a poor intake in first half 2010. We obviously changed our strategy for the first half of 2011, which is already showing results in our intake process this year. Let us now move to slide number 8 to talk about bad debt and receivables. In line with our policy of provisioning 100% of the accounts receivable past due for more than 180 days, provision for doubtful accounts in 2010 was equivalent to 4.1% of net revenue, 0.2 percentage points lower than the previous year. The number of days of accounts receivable for students stood at 50 in fourth quarter 2010, remaining stable in comparison with the last two quarters, showing the continuity of our conservative policy towards management of working capital and the health of our receivables. We continue to be oriented by great working capital management and financial health. Receivable days total 50, up from 2009, but as a result of measures that actually improved the quality of our working capital, for example, CS receivables, more usage of credit cards, and the elimination of early payment discounts. We still have the lowest term for receivables in the sector, without any form of discount or negotiation of receivables. Moving over to slide number 9, which summarizes the results of everything we've seen so far, we can see that the growth in EBITDA and EBITDA margin resulting from the factors that we commented so far. Recurring EBITDA totaled 27 million in the quarter and 127.4 million reais in the year. Thus, we deliver annual EBITDA margin of 12.5%, which is 0.7 percentage points more than last year. Despite flat revenues year over year, despite increasing taxable costs and also increasing labor taxes. Recurring net income totaled 101.7 million reais in 2010, which is a 31.9% increase over 2009. Finally, slide number 10, which presents our cash flow. If we look at our recurring operating cash flow, which is our EBITDA less working capital and CapEx, we were once again able to fully finance our operations with our operation cash flow, despite the substantial increase in CapEx, which was 70 million reais in the year, basically due to the new organic growth projects, new units and expansion of existing units, and also projects to improve infrastructure and equipment, always coming back to our strategy of bringing more quality at a lower cost to our students. I will now return to Alcalay, who will comment on Estácio's outlook for 2011.
Okay, thanks, Melzi. And moving on to slide number 11, I'd like to reaffirm to you all that I'm really optimistic about 2011, especially because of all the measures we took in our strategy and structured business model during 2010. And all of that is producing important results for the year. On our work on planning and control of operations, especially regarding the management of faculty costs, has produced the expected results, and we believe that the full implementation of our new academic model and all the improvements in the management tools will help us to achieve the margin growth that we want over the next 4 years term. We continue more and more on improving quality. And a signal of that is that this year onwards, one of the company's main targets and performance indicators, and an indicator who defines an important part of the variable compensation schemes of the management leaderships, is based on improving our performance on the CNIES indicator, the National Institutional Evaluation of all of our programs and institutions overseen by the Ministry of Education. In addition to enrollment, we will grow in terms of number of units. As you all know, we made two recent acquisitions in the north and northeast of Brazil, and we are opening four new organic units throughout 2011. We are also actively working on potential acquisitions to add to our scalable business platform. With that, we believe we will strongly advance towards accelerated growth with margin expansion. So those were our comments, and we will be glad to open and get your questions and provide you with further clarification.
Ladies and gentlemen, we will now begin the Q&A session. If you would like to ask a question, please dial star 1. If at any point your question is answered, you may remove yourself from the question queue by pressing the pound key. Again, to ask a question, please press star 1. Again, to ask a question, please press star 1 at this time. Your first question comes from the line of Yuri Retor with Santander Bank.
Good morning. My question is about the line orders in G&A expenses. In the fourth quarter of 2009, it was 10.4% of the net revenues, and in last quarter it decreased to 5.7%. Is there any particular reason for this number decrease like that or something?
Yeah, well, no, this is, you know, results of our ongoing restructuring efforts and efficiency gain in our processes and support back office activities, you know, both on the shared service central as well as, you know, discontinuing important contracts and so forth, servicing both our corporate headquarters center as well as some of our units and ancillary activities and support activities. That those efforts have been made throughout the year, throughout the third quarter, and started to, you know, to pay fruit in this last quarter specifically. So that is a result and a clear signal of the continuing permanent efforts to streamline the organization and increase efficiency and reduce the cost of the overall structure. Right now, here, any few words with from you on that?
I just think that last year we were more efficient in planning our calendar, so we were able to stop 4 or 5 days earlier than the previous year. That obviously helped us a lot to decrease costs as utilities and any other costs related to our operations.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, this is an important point also, which I was passing. We were much more intelligent and efficient in the total sort of a shutdown of our activities, not only on the field, but also on the corporate centers. And that stands with, you know, besides utilities and payroll, which you already see on the other lines, that also in a big organization like ours, with many, many different locations and so forth, services and so forth, also contributes to a better performance on other ancillary expenses on the administrative and operational level.
Okay, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Luis Bresolia with BES Securities.
Hi, good afternoon. I just want to have a color on the rental expenses. On a quarterly basis, the rental costs increased almost to like 25%. Just want to have an idea on what would cause this increase. And also on a light on the taxes reversion and about 8 million reais. What was the cause of that? Thank you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Okay, Luis, thanks for your question. Yeah, the increase in on rental expenses, you know, called the attention, and that is basically because of discontinuing some agreements and items that affected that account, which are not classified as non-recurring for specific, you know, contractual reasons. And the sort of a thorough analysis from us and together with our auditors. So those one-time, one-off items are located in the rental line, as well as other specific issues of our operation. And Nelson may help me here, because we pay rental on part of our rental agreements. We pay rental based on revenues. And more than revenues, we pay rental based on cash revenues that specific unit realizes, and that based on that we pay rental to our landlords in those specific units. And in the fourth quarter right now, we saw an interesting positive result on recovery of receivables and so forth, which is cash basis, well, on those specific units. And then, you know, that comes together with the cost of rental on a cash tag of rental expenses tagged to cash flow, cash ins on the revenues of those units, right?
Yeah, that makes sense, because it is a cash effect, but it doesn't increase our revenues. That's why you see an increase in the percentage of rental over the revenues.
Mm-hmm.
Besides that, the other roughly half of our contracts are fixed terms, right? But they have to be corrected by inflation. And since our revenue was pretty much flat year over year, even though we tried to renegotiate a lot of those contracts, we were not able to fully offset this impact of this correction by inflation. That's why you see a little increase in this percentage as well. The good news is that for 2011, we had good things coming in terms of renegotiations and also moving sites around to be able to decrease these costs.
And on your question on tax reverse, that is also an important issue that is directly related on two things. One, some IFRS mechanisms and procedures that cause that. And also, and based with that, you know, the IFRS, and this without trying not to get into very deep detail because this is a lengthy discussion, it is the fact that the IFRS makes us already account for future recoveries of income taxes based on the treatment of what they call a transitory deduction to taxable income tax. So some of our expenses, for reasons of the Brazilian tax code, are not tax deductible in the short term, but will be tax deductible in the long term. And the IFRS, you know, procedures makes us treat that in a different way. So that is one reason, you know, really to recognize as a recoverable tax credit based on the treatment of those expenses. And second is a more foreseeable taxable income in the future, which makes us to account for a recovery of tax credits that we have on our books. So that is absolutely in line with IFRS. That was thoroughly analyzed by our auditors. And, you know, if you wish, I invite you to have a separate call specifically on that, because this is a very sort of a technical, detailed discussion, which is absolutely in line with the Brazilian GAAP under the new IFRS regulations.
Okay, thank you.
Your next question comes from the line of Maria Scalarzi with Black Creek Investment.
Hello, good morning. Can you hear me?
Yes, we hear you well.
Good morning. My first question is on distance learning. Can you comment on pricing, if it's that mix or competitive pressures? Also, if you're seeing cannibalizations either from on-campus to distance learning or the other way around? And what percentage of dropout rates do you think you get once you get a more bigger student base in distance learning? And the other question is with regards to the other assets and liabilities change of 70 million. Is that IFRS related or something else? Thank you.
Hi, Marias, this is Melzi speaking. As for the distance learning prices or average ticket that you saw, the point is that we came up with 7 or 8 new courses that were launched last year, and that was pretty much a strategy of lowering the tickets for these courses so they could take or get space in the market. But these discounts are coming back to a normal level now, so for 2011, you should see this coming back to a reasonable level. Also, as our product get to be more known or well known, better known in the marketplace, we should be able to follow the same strategy as we follow for the on-campus tickets. As for cannibalization, there is no indication so far that we are suffering or struggling with any kind of cannibalization. Indeed, we have been trying to take advantage of having both the on-campus and the distance learning courses here, because we are able to transfer students that have some kind of trouble to pay, for example, to pay their tuitions in the on-campus, which are more expensive, to distance learning. So we are indeed taking advantage of our portfolio. As for growth, we expect still a fairly aggressive growth rate for 2011, because our courses are still growing, since we don't have, we will have the first students graduating by the end of 2011, so we still are seeing only the good part of the good side of the business.
Okay. And on the increase or in the change of other assets and liabilities, which, yes, you're right, has a important impact, negative impact on our net cash generation, that was basically by the main factors here. One is what you already sort of hinted, which is the effect of the income tax credit, which is which was not a cash item so far, so that positive impact on the P&L was charged as a demand on a cash basis, and it's in there. Other item that was in there is the increase of legal judiciary deposits. It's sort of a ongoing, a recurring sort of legal claims in which we are defendants, and we have either defendants or plaintiffs, if that's the right word, where we are on the active side of the legal claim. Either one side or another side, in order for you to go on with the legal discussion, you have to put up the funds in a legal deposit, so it's our money, but we have to deposit there. Thirdly, it's an advance payment that we did because of the Faculdade Atual acquisition right in the first weeks of January. The deal was closed in the first weeks of January. As you may recall, we announced the deal and we signed the deal in the last week of November. And part of the deal structure, we had to anticipate some funds for specific tax and real estate dealings according to the deal. So that was classified as related parties, which is not exactly a related party, but this is was something from our auditors. That was classified as a related party credit, but that was a advance payment in the context of the acquisition of Faculdade Atual, which was effectively closed and booked into our books in the first weeks of January. And last but not least are some other credits that we have relating to the FIES. It's not those receivables, FIES receivables that you see on our accounts receivable. That is another thing. That is effectively receivables against students which are dressed into the FIES category. That other FIES credit that increased in the other assets variation are effective, you know, credits in the FIES processing, that we have those credits in hand and we have to offset them against the future tax payments. And because of bureaucratic issues with the government and also bureaucratic issues with our internal compensations between one institution and another institution and the tax payments among themselves, that is why we accumulated a important balance of those credits. So most of these, the actual acquisition advance payment is already behind us. The FIES credits will be worked out, and we can sort of compensate that as well. And the legal deposits, you know, depending on how the legal claims work and go on, we can recover some of them, or some of them, you know, are expensed into our expenses for legal claims and so forth. And the IFRS tax reversal is, you know, based on how that goes in a cash treatment. So, yes, it is an important impact into our cash, net cash generation. We are absolutely paying attention to that. But an important share of that will be recovered as, you know, our businesses, operations, and tax dealings with the FIES and so forth go forward.
Thank you very much.
Your next question comes from the line of Clarissa Berman with Morgan Stanley.
Hi, thank you for taking the question. I have a question regarding the CNI's indicators. You mentioned this is a focus on quality in 2011. Can you comment a little bit more on that? What exactly is the strategy, if there's any particular goals in terms of scoring and that? As I understand, some of those components are a little bit exogenous. So if you could comment a little bit on that. Thank you.
Absolutely, Clarissa. And this is a great question at which we are absolutely dedicated and committed now. And this is not only the academics. This is the academics. This is all of the managers of our institutions and regulatory also. As you said, there are some exogenous drivers there, and if I may sort of summarize that in a way, which is also a very lengthy discussion, but very important, is we are evaluated from different sort of dimensions. There is the EMAGI evaluation, which is the tests that the students go through. There is the analysis of our faculty, titles and qualifications by the Ministry of Education, and basically that and some of our infrastructure and so forth. Basically that, from that you derive and you get to the CPC scores and the IGC key scores. This is part of the evaluation process, which scores and gives the grade for the institutions, and based on that, you are free to go ahead, or you have some sort of adjustments agreement and so forth, and eventually you can even sort of have your license to operate in that specific course of unit, either limited or, you know, if it's a very sort of a big fail, you can even get your license to operate canceled or seized. Besides that, you have the all regular evaluation processes that, you know, commissions from the MACI come to all of the institution units, also into an in-local approach, analyze infrastructure, analyze the faculty, analyze the pedagogical drivers and so forth, and content on all of the programs, and have some scores, give us some rates, and so forth. So all of that in different cycles, in a somewhat sort of a complex dynamics, stand for, you know, our ability to go ahead, our ability to increase our courses, and also our ability to be positioned as a great quality education company in the eyes of our target public, the prospect students, and so forth. We have now, and we assembled throughout the second half of 2010, more precisely to you, a very thorough analysis and a very thorough conjunction of instruments, performance indicators, action plans in the hands of our academic people, in the hands also of all the managers and coordinators in the field, in each of our units, because these guys are the guys who really also make the difference in the quality of our programs down the road there in the field. You know, it's not only the academics sent on a central base making great curriculums that contribute to the quality of our education. You know, those guys, the guys who, you know, Melzi until last week managed in the COO position, those guys in the field managing well, the coordinators, the programs, the satisfaction of the students, so forth, those guys are key to, you know, elevating more and more our ranking. All of these guys, they have specific action plans. They have specific targets. They have specific tasks to improve significantly and constantly the quality of our education in all of the different dimensions. So for when MACI comes with the evaluation processes, be it visits to our units, be it the ANAGI tests in the end of the each year for the different groups of programs and so forth, we having great grades and so forth. Just so you know, and again about the different dimensions, one dimension is the ANADI, the test that the student take, and this is a little bit more driven towards the test, because the student who makes the ANADI right now is a student who was enrolled with us 3 years ago, and he makes the ANADI, so he brings the quality or not quality of 3 years, 4 years ago, so the grades that we take there are more driven towards the quality of the curriculum 3-4 years ago. And that, you know, is illustrative a little bit of the changes that we decided to do both in our new curriculum and also in the improvement of our current units and so forth. The in-local visits of commissions, committees, organized by MACI, who come to our units every day and analyze some specific courses and so forth, they are more and absolutely driven and biased towards the present situation, because the guys go in there, they talk to our teachers, they analyze our current curriculums, and they analyze our current infrastructure, library, professors, infrastructure, equipment, and so forth. And the good news is that with the, all of the changes that we've been doing over the last 2 years here in this organization, these grades, which are biased towards the current situation and which illustrates all the changes that we've been implementing on the last 2 years, we are getting great grades there. We are getting threes, and I tell you, we are getting lots of fours and even some fives.
Another one yesterday.
Another one yesterday in a program here in one of our units in Bahia, right? In Bahia, Salvador. So that is also very illustrative of the changes that we've been making here. Changes that can be assessed by in-local visits of commission by NECI. They already illustrate and give us a lot of fours. Some even fives and, you know, threes, which are satisfactory. And evaluation processes, which are more biased towards, you know, the situation 4, 5, 3 years ago, they carry with them, you know, a different scenario, and they carry with them some lower grades. So that is why that makes us pretty much confident on the assertiveness of the decisions that we have undertaken here to invest a lot in the quality of our programs, and that makes us very confident about the results that we're going to be able to get down the road on the future energies and on the already ongoing evaluations by the in-local commissions visiting our campuses.
Great, thank you.
The next question comes from the line of Kurt Joe Honig with Private Capital.
Two quick ones for Alkali. First question, can you please elaborate a little bit on the pricing differential between the acquisition of Facultad Atual for what I think was 4,400 RIAS and had 4,500 students versus Facultad de Natal, which had half the size, which was half the size of Atual, but commanded a 20% premium over Atual? And also if we should expect the pricing, the acquisition going forward, if we should expect the pricing, the midpoint of these two pricings as a proxy for future acquisitions.
So that is the question. You said you had two. Anyway.
So that's the first one. The second one is, You mentioned real fast that you're opening 4 new organic units in total over the course of 2011. I just wanted to know the size of the students in those 4 units.
Okay. First on the acquisitions, Atual and Natal. Yeah, on a per student base, Natal was a little bit more expensive, around 5,300 reais, as opposed to 4,400 reais of Atual. Listen, this is very sort of based on the IRR embedded in each of those acquisitions. You know, we always say that the per student multiple is obviously important to look at. It is important to always think about them. But, you know, they are not the sizes and driving leverage of our analysis. We make acquisitions based on a demanded IRR in each and every acquisition that we do. And as the numbers show a little bit, you know, the Natal acquisition gives us a little bit higher IRR, and that was translated into, you know, a per student a little bit higher prices than when compared to Atual. Even though I don't think it's, you know, especially for those types and sizes of acquisition, that premium to be, you know, in any way material. But rest assured, you know, we always talk and think about IRR here based on the synergies that we can put together, and you may imagine what types of synergies we are able to implement in such small acquisitions like these ones. And I tell you that because, you know, in terms of trends and possible future acquisitions and so forth, there will be in some cases that these multiples here will go anyway, you know, and could go higher, and I will still justify very strongly before you and so forth and any of our shareholders that such an acquisition, even at a higher multiple on a per student base, is absolutely accretive to the company, because based on the IRR that it provides, based on the synergies, based on the strategic value, but always strategic value turned into real money down the road, even at a more expensive on a per student base multiple, such an acquisition because of this and this and that will be absolutely justifiable and attractive. So that is not a concern to me, and that is absolutely based on what I just mentioned. In terms of the four organic acquisitions, I only can comment on one of that, which is already up and running, open in São Paulo. We always talk too much about acquisitions. On the four new organic new campuses that we are opening in 2011, I can only comment on one of that, which is already up and running there in São Paulo, in the Chácara Flora district. It is a somewhat small campus, because it's a campus operating in a very high-end niche segment of the market, which is culinary arts and hospitality, highly profitable given how premium they are, and up and running already, and very good operations there. And in spite of being niche and somewhat small in terms of all of our size, it is important, especially in São Paulo, to have such an action, because we are actively pursuing a stronger position in São Paulo. So that strategy, that small unit, helps us in terms of disseminating our brand, increasing the power of our brand there, both towards the target public as well as, you know, the community there and the big sort of opinion leaders and so forth. The other three units, you know, even though the works are there, I would like not to comment those, because it's somewhat of a strategic information, and I don't want my competition to get to know our next steps until the very last minute possible, when really the billboards and the logos stay in front of our new building. So I apologize that I'll not be able to comment on those. In terms of size, they are, you know, between 4,000 and 6,000, 7,000 student units in terms of size, obviously on a full regime basis. So we are very, very optimistic with those. It is a milestone, because Estácio had stayed absolutely out of the expansion game over the last 5 years, including new sites opening, and now we resume that process, which is highly positive to our performance going forward. So with the landmark, we are opening new four units, and we are also discussing with lots of municipalities and so forth to considering opening another new one, but nothing still official. So we are very, very happy. That is what that explains a little bit of the increase on our CapEx for the year, and also will explain, you know, why our CapEx for 2011 also will be still a little bit higher, but is a very, very good money and good use of our money going forward.
Thank you, Alkali. Can I just turn to Melody for just a couple of quick questions? It's going to be very fast. The EBITDA in distance learning, based on where margins we heard, where is it fair to assume that total EBITDA in dollar value was about between 10 to 12% of total EBITDA for the quarter?
Yes, it is roughly that. Okay. For now, it will obviously increase in the future as some distance learning increase their student base, for sure.
Okay, that's very positive. And also, the FIES, total number of FIES students as of 3Q10 was I think 6,000 students. Where was that as of the end of the year?
We are finishing the year with, or opening the year with 7,000 students in the PS program.
Okay, thanks, Melvie. Appreciate it. Thank you, guys.
Pleasure.
Again, to ask a question, please press star 1. There seems to be no further questions. I would like to turn the floor back to Mr. Eduardo Alcalay for his final remarks.
Well, okay. Thank you again, everybody, for participating in our conference call. Our investor relations department, under the leadership of Flavio Oliveira here, is always available to help you with any further questions and so forth. We hope to see you again soon in our next conference calls and also in some events that we participate. Once again, thank you very much and have a good day. Bye-bye.
This concludes Estacio's conference call. You may now disconnect and have a good day.